programming sponsored by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Over 100% financing on auto loans. Where you bank does matter.
You've probably heard the religiously based question, what makes this day or night different from every other? Apply that question to everything Catholics do each day, and that should lead us to think and act differently in all things, at all times. Sounds sweeping? Yes, but it's doable. I'm Sheila Logminas. Time for a closer look.
Reaching beyond the headlines to give you the real story. A closer look with Sheila Logminas.
On Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. No matter what your call in life is, whatever your vocation, be it a professional career, be it a stay-at-home parent, be it a religious life, you name it, whatever your work is in life, whatever God has called you to do, and I hope we all discern that, we're all doing God's will if we pray for that and only that, and no more and no less. So in doing that, we should be able to, and the law should not infringe upon this, though it tries, the states try, we should be able to do that informed as Catholics. But are we? How do we engage even the news? How do we engage in the political process, which we have a moral responsibility to do? And so on and so on. In everything we do, we have to first be Catholics and well-informed Catholics. Joining me now to talk about all of this is Monsignor Stuart Swetland, president of Donnelly College in Kansas City, Kansas, where he's professor of leadership and Christian ethics as well. Monsignor is host of Go Ask Your Father here on Relevant Radio. He's also the senior religion correspondent for the Relevant Radio Network for all these types of questions and thoughts carried out to the full. Monsignor, welcome back. I love talking with you about these things.
It's great to be with you, Sheila.
It's good to summer, you know, time to think and act just a little bit, take a breath, right? Differently how in that we don't work as hard, though we all still have to work. I know I'm working pretty hard and I need to pray about that. But Monsignor, on that note, what makes this day different? Let's talk about that, because when we go to the voting booth, right, we don't vote as Democrats, Republicans. We need to vote on the best candidates on moral issues of the day and their principles and who's holding the right principles about the human person and human dignity. So what about the fact that every day should be informed in every hour and everything we do, first of all, as Catholics?
Right. This is a day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad of it. Each and every day is precious time given to us by God to fulfill the things we are called to do here and now. We know as Catholic Christians that we're pilgrim people. We're just passing through. We have no lasting home here and now. But we know that what we do here and now matters now, and it matters in the hereafter, because we are building up the kingdom and providing, if you will, the raw material which God will use in the recreation of the new heaven and the new earth. So while we are here in space and time, God calls us to a vocation, a vocari, a calling, where we are to build up his kingdom. So each and every day is precious in fulfilling that. But I think that lots of people sometimes don't figure out how to balance all the things that God's calling us to do, because it's not just simply one thing God's calling us to do. God's calling us to serve him in various ways. So there's a proper time for prayer each and every day. There's a proper time for work. There's a proper time for rest and leisure. There's proper time for study and formation. And these and many more, we could, there's a time of life when one goes from active work to a more contemplative retirement, being a person of wisdom and dispensing that wisdom to others. As well. But in each season of our life, we are God's. We're called to a particular vocation. And what we should do with each and every day is fulfill that vocation by living a balanced and holy life.
Oh, balance is so important. Let's talk about that for a moment, because everyone listening right now would do well. I'm going to lead the pack, y'all. I'm the first among you, all of you, coast to coast, who needs to, and I do this every day, Monsignor. I really do pray in my daily prayer life to discern where that balance is, especially, you know, as if we're really on the right journey, we should be discerning and moving forward all the time and feel like we're making, you know, I don't know, a little progress. If we're really listening for the Lord, we pray and then listen. And that's the other half of it. A lot of people just busy. They put up the petitions and then go. And they don't listen for the Lord. But I've been trying, Monsignor, and I'm discerning more and more. You're working too hard. You're working too late. It's all for the kingdom. It's all for the Lord. It's all good work. And yeah, it is. But the Lord doesn't want you to work that hard. And so, Monsignor, there's a saying a friend of mine reminded me of several years ago about the devil. He or she who the devil can't make bad, he makes busy. And I thought, that's not a bad saying, you know? Anyway, so the busyness is not what God wills, but every single thing we do needs to be, as you said, it matters in the hereafter. That's what I really want to pick up on from what you just said. Because in my discernment of what God wills, you know, when you read the headlines these days, we can get, even in our thoughts without expressing them out loud, get too caught up in the political stuff and be upset. No, that's a lie. Or no, that's not just, that's not fair, that's not true. But we really need, Monsignor, don't we, to come to not be that engaged in that part of it, but just do what we can to contribute to the good. Because, Monsignor, it's striking me as what matters in the hereafter is not what people are keeping in the forefront of their minds. And as Catholics, we need to realize this is going to end someday here, and then we have to make an account for what we did.
Exactly. And, you know, that I agree with you that we can often be too busy. This is a constant theme in my spiritual direction that I need from my spiritual director. Is he's telling me to do a little less, but to do it more focused. And I think, you know, we see this in the great biblical example of Martha and Mary.
Mm.
Martha was doing something that was required of her society. She was doing the duties of hospitality. But she was doing a good, but at that moment in the Lord's life, it was the wrong good. And I think that sometimes that's what we can be tempted into, doing something that's good, but it's the wrong good. It's not the good that we're supposed to be doing. For example, think of a priest who gets involved in politics. It's not that politics is bad. It can be an important and good endeavor for the right person. But a priest is never called to be involved in politics. And so it's the wrong good for that particular man at that particular time. In a similar way, Martha was doing something good, but it was the wrong good for the Lord at that moment. He didn't want a big meal. You know, the Lord says, you're busy about many things. My read on that, she was making many courses. You know, she was having an elaborate dinner. One thing is enough. I think he was almost saying one course would be enough. Mary has chosen the better part, because at that moment it was close to his passion. He wanted the comfort and the solace that comes from close friendships. And he was close to that family. He was close to Lazarus. Mm-hmm. He was close to Mary. He was close to Martha. And he loved being in that home. But he didn't want to fuss about a big meal at that moment. He wanted their attention, their love, their fellowship, their friendship. And that's what Martha missed. Mary chose the better part because she chose the right good. So not only is that we should do good, but we should choose to do the right good. And sometimes the right good is sleep. Sometimes the right good is vacation. Sometimes the right good is study. Sometimes the right good is work. And we have to balance all of that. And always something we have to put in there is prayer.
Oh, that's so important. And we're going to, for all of you tuned in, I hope you can stay tuned in, because during our conversation, Monsignor and I floated this by him ahead of time, and he was really eager to talk about it as much as I am. We're going to talk about Joseph Pieper's Leisure, the Basis of Culture, how important that is, and what you just said, Monsignor, the balance of all these things is part of that. But people don't understand leisure rightly ordered, properly ordered, and we're going to get to that. But but that should come after the talking. We need to talk about the things that people really are all caught up in these days, even in the summertime with people being off. Look at what's going on in politics, and some people are just glued to that, whatever their source of news is. On that topic, Monsignor, let's talk. That's a two-part conversation. One is, let's talk about our involvement in politics, and let's talk about our accessing different forms of media to get our news. And maybe as part of that closer look, the importance of Catholic media, because there are more of them. We ourselves at Relevant Radio are growing and spreading all the time, gaining new affiliates. We're coast to coast. And at the same time, providentially, Catholic media is taking on a bigger importance. So let's start with, you know, our involvement in politics. We are required, right, our bishops say, to be involved in the political process. What does that mean exactly for Catholics?
Well, it will mean different things for different people based on their vocation. For the young, it means learning about our political system, learning about our constitutional system, this experiment in ordered liberty, learning about our history, learning Catholic social teaching. So one knows the principles which should be embodied in any just society, having a robust and holistic understanding of what the common good is, because politics is about pursuing the common good. So the young have to learn a great deal in multiple areas to be able to be productive citizens, to be the kind of citizens they're meant to be. For those of us who are a little older, the learning doesn't stop. We have ongoing formation so that we know how to apply Catholic social teaching, especially in the field of endeavor that we're called to do. For you and I, involvement in our in social means of communication, there's a rich vein of Catholic social teaching about the proper role and use of social media. And so we should know that. We should master that. We should apply that. And then for all of us as Catholic citizens, in accordance with our vocation, we have a call to be involved, to be responsibly involved, to participate in our society, in our political system. So that obviously minimally means that we all exercise our franchise to vote in each and every election we're eligible to vote in, that we choose candidates based on their commitment to a robust understanding of the common good, that we are in our daily life sanctifying the world through our work and endeavor in the things we're called to do. For myself as a college president, that means doing the mission of Donnelly College and making sure that that mission is embodied in everyone that works there and goes to school there and live that out. So there's multiple levels based on our vocation, based on our calling, and based on our age.
And in that political process, we're called to be involved in, based on, you know, all those points you just made. I always like to keep on hand and come back to when I can your address or your talk. It was at a conference, I think a few years or several years ago now, Clothing the Naked Public Square, Politics and Catholic Social Teaching, because you're such a good teacher of that and all these things, actually, with ethics and leadership and Catholic social teaching. But you, in that address, Monsignor, you got into what it means to be a faithful Catholic and a faithful citizen in today's confusing political climate. And when you gave that address, at least the first time I remember, I believe it was in Washington several years ago. And in that, you discussed the Catholic duty to participate, what you just said, in the political process, formation of good conscience in light of the gospel and Catholic social teaching, and why we should feel homeless in today's American political structure. And look at what's happened in politics since then. We now have, look at the Democratic debates over two nights, two separate whole groups of them. There were so many. And people can look at a candidate as having good ideas and principles, maybe on immigration at the border or something else and something else. But then that same person who says we shouldn't rip a child from a mother's arms would stand for the right to abortion, to rip the child from the mother's womb. So people really need to form their consciences. And today's politics make people drift with the political winds of the cultural winds of the time. Talk about that. There's a lot of pressure to follow the pack and get behind people who are in some ways, you know, leading attractively.
Yes, and it's funny when I, you know, in my worst nightmare, I didn't think we'd be so much worse today than we were when I first gave that talk several years ago. Now, I think it was six, but to see the dislocation that has happened where both political parties have abandoned pretty much recourse to a robust understanding of the common good, and both have embraced intrinsically evil actions as something that they, you know, embody or promote. Obviously, when you think about it, it was in my lifetime and yours, Sheila, that the predominant place that most Catholics found their political home in the United States was in the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. But now, of course, that party has embraced several intrinsic evils that make should make all Catholics feel very, very uncomfortable in that political party. In similar ways, there are things in the Republican Party that we should feel very uncomfortable with their attitude towards universal health care, some of their stances on immigration and environment, and others. So we have no lasting home here and now. And right now, as Catholics in the United States political system, we have no home in the major political parties. So what does that mean for us? Mm-hmm. It means we have to be salt, leaven, and light. We have to be the salt of the earth, doing the things we can day in, day out in our vocations to make the world more like it's meant to be, to build up the kingdom. We have to be leaven. A little bit of leaven can raise the whole mess up, the scriptures tell us. So while we recognize it's a mess, we know we're called to be leaven, and we're called to change society and help raise it up. How? By giving example and the witness. The early Roman Empire was transformed by Christianity, or the early church transformed the Roman Empire, I should put it that way, through the witness of their family life and the witness of their commitment to the poor. And we should be known for the witness to our commitment to family life lived holy and robustly, and commitment to taking care of the least among us. And last but not least, we're to be light. That means we're to bring the truths of the gospel in this area, because we're talking about politics and economy, the social teaching of the church. We to bring that into the marketplace of ideas, because we should at least still have confidence that the truth in the long run wins out. And it's a battle for truth right now. There is truth, and the truth is knowable. We have to live it and proclaim it until more and more people see the light and come to the light.
Oh, that's so beautifully put. So being, we have to be every day, right? That should be like a more part of our morning prayer. How, Lord, today can I be, whatever my profession is or vocation, salt, leaven, and light wherever I go. You know, when you said that, that reminded me immediately of years ago on my radio program. I had a young man on who had just returned to near his home in New York City. He and some friends of his, all buddies, I guess, in New York City had driven from there to the Toronto World Youth Day, which I believe was in 2002. I mean, I think it was 2002, but anyway, I think that was it. And he was, he was telling me how when they went to that, so that I think the theme of that was salt of the earth or light of the and light of the world, or at least that was a call by the Holy Father to the young people gathered there to go out in the world and be the salt and light of the world. So he was telling me on the radio program, I got him on because he and his friends had an apostolate going, a wonderful one in New York City. And so he said, well, how this started was back at World Youth Day in Toronto when we were driving back, we were so filled with the joy and the faith and the Holy Spirit that on the car ride back, we were saying, he said, I asked my friends and we were all talking about, so, okay, how can we be the salt and light of New York City? And I started laughing and thought, there's a good question. And they started an apostolate based on John Paul II's Love and Responsibility book, you know? I thought, well, what a good thing to do. You talk amongst yourselves and come up with a good idea based on what the Lord has inspired you to do. And that's a wonderful thing for young people to reach out to others and talk about love and responsibility. So, That's kind of an idea, right, Monsignor? What we should do every day to be the salt, light, and leaven of the world.
Right, and I think more and more we should look to those times in our history when we as a church were up against a secular, anti-Christian society, because more and more our society has become not just secularized, but even anti the Christian message. And that's why I look at what... you know, the early church had to put up with. Of course, you know, they were martyred, many of them, for their faith. And right now we're not under that circumstance, though who knows what the future may hold. What we're called to do is give witness, which is what martyr means. And we give witness like the early church did, you know, that great line from that anonymous letter written about the end of the second century of the Christian era, where it said about Christians, you know, the writer was marveling about these Christians who were so different than the rest. He said they shared mm-hmm. their board, but not their bed. You know, in a time when sexual promiscuity was dominant among many in the Roman Empire, Christians stood out because of chastity. But they also stood out at a time when the poor and the weak were despised and hated and often left to die. Christians were known for sharing their board. And so they were known for taking care of the poor. And I think the Catholic Church in the United States, that's what we have to be known for. People should, every time they see a Catholic church, should say, those are the people that take care of the poor. Those are the ones that take care of the sick and the imprisoned, the refugee, the migrant, the ones that no one else cares about. That's the place that you can go to be treated with dignity and respect and be cared for.
And yet, Monsignor, they are noticing and singling us out. Now, some are doing that very thing, and that's why we've got it. That's not even the reason why. We just have to do it because we have to do that. We have to take care of the poor. It was funny, just this morning when I was doing just the usual morning routine, it was prayer time, but it was also the mental prayer. You just think things. It's funny. Sometimes I love it when, instead of some jingle from a commercial on TV going through my mind, I hear in my mind something from maybe Mass. A church song, and I, what's been going through my mind? The Lord hears the cry of the poor. Blessed be the Lord. Blessed be the poor. That was going through my mind. The Lord hears the cry of the poor, and I thought that's so fundamental. It's Paul. Just the other day in a reading, Paul was talking about, I think it was in Galatians, maybe, I forget, about it, how it was like the last line or something. And I was mindful to care for the poor first, because that's our mandate. He didn't say mandate, but that's what we're called to do. So, but back to your point, we are seen, and some people are really attracted by that. Others are singling us out and trying to stop, as you know, Little Sister of the Poor and many others, Jack the Cake Maker. We've got a florist. We've got a photographer. We've got all these people taken to court because they are living according to their religious beliefs, which real ideological activists are calling Christians living according to their beliefs in their work. They're calling it discrimination. That's not what it is, but that's what it's being labeled.
Right. And if we, you know, this is where martyrdom comes in, and it may be the white martyrdom of being unpopular, of being not considered for the memberships in the finest clubs or in normal, polite society. But if that's the least we have to do for our faith, you know, Jesus promised we'd be treated like he was treated, and ultimately he was crucified. So we have to recognize that we're going to have a share in the cross. But the more we're known for taking care of the poor, let them call us what they want. And many people, you know, hated Christians because they wouldn't bow down to the emperor in ancient Rome as God. They felt that that was a source of disunity, and that was being traitorous. Well, you know, obviously we have no other God but the one living and true God, and that comes first. So we must serve our nation. But we must serve God first. You know, you think of Thomas More when he was being martyred. He said, and at the end, he said, "I go to my death the king's good subject, the king's good servant, but God's first." Mm-hmm. And that's what we have to recognize as a certain priority in our love. God comes first.
So on that note, it's important that we continue talking about how to do that in this prevailing culture of the times, which people need to calm down about and get less, you know, worked up about what we're seeing. It really helps us a lot get back to what we've been talking about, finding that balance, right, and that order. And in a few moments, Monsignor, I want you to address, of course, as a president of a university, I want to talk about the upcoming canonization of John Henry Newman, his famous work, The Idea of a University, how important Catholic higher education is. We'll talk about Catholic media, why that's so important and growing more so all the time, therefore growing. And we are so blessed to be growing across the country. Thank you to all of you who helped make that happen. We are happy to reach you this way. Monsignor and I will talk about that, how Catholics should approach the news and other matters in the culture. You're looking at universities, look at Catholic higher education. Monsignor Sweatland will address those issues and more next.